It is a big week. How many times have we said that about Brexit? But this week is partly another big week. 20 representatives, because of course there are going to be votes this week and amendments and all of that. But we'll get to that in a moment. 20 representatives from business, farming, trade unions and the community and voluntary sector are heading London today to speak directly to the leaders of Labour, the Liberal Democrats and Scottish Nationalist Party, stressing to them the need for Parliament to unite and protect Northern Ireland jobs. Let me speak to one of the people who is going across. It's the representative from the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, Aidan Connolly. Aidan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Now, you're talking to voices that may or may not listen. Why is it so important to speak to Labour, the Liberal Democrats and the Scottish Nationalist Party? Is there Scottish National Party? Is there any point in speaking to anybody short of, you know, the Conservatives and the DUP?
Well, we hopefully will see the DUP today as well, and we will be speaking to some of the Conservatives. But I think what we're really trying to do is to get across what tangibly what a no deal Brexit or a Brexit at all means for the good people of Northern Ireland. And I suppose the message that we have for those politicians is quite simply that the time for political games and for brinkmanship, that's past. We're now around 60 days away from Brexit, and we simply can't sleepwalk into that no deal, which will be a catastrophe fee for business and for our households. So our members, the retailers, have real concerns about the affordability and the availability of goods in the event of a no deal Brexit. So, you know, these are things that we need the politicians to understand. It's not just about political games. This is going to affect people's, not only their livelihoods, but their lives.
But our political game's not just getting going. We saw at the border there on Saturday, they were putting up army checkpoints and building walls that they were knocking down. It was like something you'd see in a drama. And of course, across at Parliament, we have amendment after amendment, discussion after discussion, debate after debate, vote after vote. It just seems to be a grandstanding of the highest order for anyone who's looking in on it.
Well, there's never let it be said that there's not a huge flair for the dramatic in Northern Ireland politics. Yes, there was a lot going on at the weekend, and there's a lot going on in Westminster as well. And I think what we're trying to do is to have that dialogue and allow the dialogue rather than having the games. I think one of the big things that isn't mentioned very much about Brexit is the fact that the Stormont Assembly isn't sitting is actually really hurting us here, because we've had the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee, we've had the Exit in the EU Committee in Westminster look into all these, what it means for Northern Ireland. What we really needed was for our own committees here, the Committee on the Economy, on Agriculture, all those committees doing the research and doing the having that sort of dialogue here and having a very strong research-based, evidence-based picture to bring back to Westminster. But since they don't, that's why businessmen and women and civic leaders are over today trying to make politicians of all persuasions understand that, you know what, it's going to hit Northern Ireland hard, it's going to hit Northern Ireland first, and it's going to hit Northern Ireland worst.
So you're coaxing as many politicians as you possibly can to go with the argument that the no-deal scenario should be taken off the table.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, we've been very clear. There was a lot of good things in Theresa May's deal. The fact that we would be in the EU and in the backstop and in the UK as far as business is concerned, that's brilliant. Because it's not the case that we have had built up this supply chain over this past 20 years since we've had the Good Friday Agreement. It's not, it's 40 years. And for us, we don't have a choice of whether we want GB or the Republic market or the EU market. For us, we need all those markets to be able to continue to be successful.
So those who say you're scaremongering, I hear this word so often on this radio programme. People say, oh, you've listened to the likes of the Northern Ireland retail trade representatives, they're scaremongering, the trade unions are scaremongering, the farmers are scaremongering, the people who aren't in bed with the DUP are scaremongering. it's just one accusation after another. For someone looking at it neutrally and then listening to the likes of the DUP speak from a position of power, you get a sense that it's almost impossible to get people to agree at such a critical time. And we'll never really know at the end of it who was right.
Well, the thing is, Frank, there's a lot of people who are speaking from the heart and speaking with emotion, and that's good for them. What we have tried to do is to speak about the facts, to talk about economics, not ideology, to talk about people, not politics. And that's the way you have to look at this in a very sort of clinical way. If I put it back to you, Frank, you've been in this game a long time. When was the last time that you saw farmers stand up with retailers, stand up with processors, stand up with manufacturers, stand up with the freight guys? I don't think that this has happened in this past 20, 30 years, that they've all been standing together shoulder to shoulder with the same message about how bad Brexit's going to be or how bad anything's going to be. And you got to ask yourself, why are they doing that and why are they doing it now? Even the academic community are weighing in behind us. And what we're doing, we're speaking in facts, we're speaking in figures, and we're speaking in about eventualities that could and will happen to Northern Ireland.
But according to the DUP, if you go with the backstop, which is one of the strong arguments that you're prepared to go with, that weakens the union. Which is more important, the economy or the union?
Well, that's more of a political question, Frank. And as you know, I'm sort of loath to get into those. But what I can say is that those checks that we have, we have said, as far as Theresa May's deal is concerned, one of the things that we were concerned about was that there would be extra checks coming GB to NI. And that would put, a little bit more burden on paperwork. It would put a little bit more delay and there would be a little bit more cost. However, if you compare that to the costs and the delays and the tariffs and the customs and the effect of dismantling our supply chain by having a hard border, there's a big difference between a 2% rise and a 15% rise in costs, and that's really what we're looking at. The other thing is we've had checks in Larne, SPS, it's sanitary and phytosanitary checks in Larne and other ports, For 20, 30 years, just because of the way standards are. And I don't think that has undermined anybody's Britishness. I don't think it's undermined anybody's Irishness either. And to us, this isn't, like I said before, this isn't about politics. This is about the people and how it's going to affect everybody's daily lives.
Okay, Edon, just finally and briefly, Jeremy Corbyn's one of the main people you're meeting. Do you have any evidence from following Jeremy Corbyn's movements in relation to Brexit that he knows what he's doing?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think one of the, I'll put it like this, I think one of the hardest things that we have had to deal with is the political games here. People are genuinely concerned about Northern Ireland. I don't think they have all the facts and figures, and that's why we're here. But they've got one eye on Brexit and one eye on something else. So Labour's one eye on Brexit, one eye on getting into power. The SNP have one eye on Brexit, one eye on second and referendum, independence referendum for Scotland. And you can go across all of the political parties. And what we're trying to do is make sure that Northern Ireland business and Northern Ireland households are front and centre of their thinking. And I think we can do it.
Okay, Edon, thank you very much indeed. Edon Conley expressing concerns that maybe a lot of you have or some of you totally deny exist. You can let us know what you think. 0289033105. Political commentator and writer Alex Kane is available for a conversation. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very good. It is a big week, Alex, isn't it? There's a lot happening this week.
It is a huge week. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago. Well, I think we talked just before the last withdrawal, agreement, meaningful vote, and so it was very important and went down to a huge crash at that point. But this is simply, Frank, because we're getting closer and closer. If something goes wrong tomorrow, if she fails, I mean, if she's defeated again tomorrow on her motion, does she survive? If she's ambushed by one of half a dozen amendments, which could derail her anyway, what happens? I mean, at this stage, we are no further on than we were back in, the day after she became Prime Minister, with the Brexit means Brexit. We still have no idea, because you could pick from the top hat, you could pick six or seven varieties of Brexit which have supporters across the Commons, but none of which have a majority support, and that's going to be the problem. Is it now possible to get enough people to rally around just one of these options? And I'm still not sure.
Do you think no deal will be off the table by the end of the week?
My instinct, and it is only my instinct in this, Frank, is that the Prime Minister, does not want a no-deal situation. And for all the talk from some of the purest Brexiteers, those are the ones who want a clean break, you know, from the European Union. Even they, most of them want that as part of a deal of some sort, because it's all very well saying, oh, you know, we go in there, we stand alone, we stand brave, free and sovereign. That's not the way the world works anymore. The world is global now, and it's global and it's local at the same time. And just this notion of, oh, we'll just go out and immediately start trading on World Trade Organization rules, it doesn't work like that. You have to have done the deals with the countries involved. We haven't done those deals. I mean, it'd be brilliant if the Prime Minister or Jacob Rees-Mogg or Boris Johnson could get up, you know, tomorrow and go, well, look, here are examples of details. We've been working with countries on trade deals under WTO rules, which would kick on, you know, 1 minute past 11 o'clock on the 29th of March. We've done the homework. None of that's been done. And I think even if you listen to the language of Mogg, Rees-Mogg last week, even of Boris Johnson, oh, well, you know, something could be done on the backstop. Yes, I think, you know, I think Rees-Mogg's line was, even with my reservations about the withdrawal agreement, if there's some resolution on the backstop, I would reluctantly support it. So even as some of that, the key members of the ERG organisation are coming round to the idea they don't want to just crash out, because no one, if we have no idea what's happening now, Frank, just imagine what would happen if we crash out. Nobody, because there won't be a stable government, there won't be any trade deals done, there won't be any game plan or strategy. Other countries, you'll be at a disadvantage. Imagine going to try and trade with somebody, work out a deal with someone that goes, you're stuck, you really need anything from us, right? Don't you? We'll do it in our terms. And that's the problem. No one in their right mind, hard Brexit, soft Brexit, no Brexit, nobody in their right mind wants a no deal situation.
But it's better to a lot of politicians than the backstop.
I'm not sure if it is in that sense, because I think the backstop became... My own instinct has always been, Frank, that the backstop will be resolved, and that there will be a soft landing. I think some people deliberately used the border situation, because we've been told, you know, Labour and so on, Scottish nationalists, oh, they too, you know, if there's a bit of tinkering with the backstop, which probably can be done reasonably easily.
So how suddenly, can that be done? Because this is critical. How can it be done without embarrassing the DUP or without embarrassing the likes of Simon Coveney? How can the backstop be resolved?
I think it'll be resolved by putting a time limit on it, because I can't see it being withdrawn at this stage. You and I talked about this, I think, maybe at the time it was first introduced, which is what, 8-9 months ago, when it became formally part of the stuff. And I remember saying to you that it should never have been in there. The DUP overplayed their hand. That's how it ended up in that situation. But one thing we do know for definite, Frank, and this is the key, because it's 6 weeks ago in this, and it'll be a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and parsing and nuancing. Dublin, Belfast, Brussels, they do not want a hard border. They do not want all the problems that could flow from that. And not simply security, political, Good Friday, the other, you know, knock-on effects in Scotland. None of them want it. They will resolve that. I cannot tell you the form of words in which they will find the resolve, Frank, but they will resolve it, because the consequences of something going wrong in the London-Dublin relationship and the Belfast-Dublin relationship and on the border are they're too big, they're too dangerous for any of those governments to contemplate. And whatever the relationship may be between Barnier and May, you know, they're both experienced politicians. They know that they a compromise is required there. And I think it sounds like a cop-out, but I don't know the form of words, Frank. They will, everything in my, I've followed politics for 50 odd years, everything in my fibre tells me that will be sorted out in the same way that we'll sort out, there will be a soft landing. The battle in the House of Commons is not primarily, we get carried away in Northern Ireland thinking that we are the centre of everything. It's not primarily about the backstop. It's primarily about the nature of the withdrawal agreement itself, of the terms upon which we lose. The battle is between those, some elements who think that, don't forget, a few months ago, Frank, for Rees-Mogg and others, the withdrawal agreement, Vassalage. That was the words, you know, that Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson used. They'd no mention of the backstop other than it irritated them, but the rest of it was vassalage. That's moved. Those people, as I said earlier, those people are thinking, well, do this and we can do something on the withdrawal agreement. And that's what May's doing at this minute. She's basically trying to say to Dublin and or to Brussels in particular, give me a soft landing on that. I can get the rest of this through. And as I keep saying, if I go back to the Good Friday Agreement 6 weeks before the Good Friday Agreement, everyone was saying, ooh, can't, no, too much. You get to the crunch moment. We're not quite at that crunch moment, but we're getting there.
Alex, one final question, and you're writing about it in the newsletter today. There's almost, how would I best describe this, an air of admiration for nationalism and for the proactive stance of nationalists and Republicans at that gathering at the waterfront on Saturday, where they had the Beyond Brexit, the future of Ireland. You think unionists should be as proactive as that?
Absolutely. I mean, if I was a nationalist, Frank, I would be doing exactly what they were doing at the waterfront, bringing together all the strands, because they have concerns. Well, unionists sometimes think, oh, they shouldn't, it's got nothing to do with them, you know, oh, the whole United Kingdom voted, blah, blah, blah. Very particular local matters, nationalists in Northern Ireland have concerns, and they've decided to work together to see if there's some way of doing it. Yes, some of them are probably pushing towards an all-Ireland, let's have a border poll agenda. Others, look, how are we protected if there is a hard Brexit or a no deal, whatever it is. It's the sort of conversation you have, Frank, and all I'm simply saying, and I know some unionists will get annoyed, oh, Alex, why are you saying this? Because it's what unionists should have been doing, because I think I mentioned in the article that in 2012, the celebration of the centenary of the Ulster Covenant, Peter Robinson made a speech. It was a joint unionist dinner saying, we need to bring together some of the brightest minds and thinkers and strategists, academics, historians, come together to prepare for, in 10 years' time, for the centenary of Northern Ireland. Bring us all together, find out what our difficulties are, find the best way of promoting the union. How do we make our beliefs more acceptable to people who have some, you know, discomfort with it? None of that happened. Nationalists thinking, we have a major challenge here with Brexit. We're not sure what's happening, but whatever happens, we want collectively to be ready. It's sensible politics, Frank. And unionists, sadly, and I speak as a unionist, sometimes with a terrible habit of burying our heads in the sand and thinking, it'll be all right in the night. Politics doesn't work like that anymore. You need to always be prepared. And while I don't agree with the nationalist interpretation of what's happening, I accept their right, and I respect the fact that they have taken grasp the very difficult situation and decided, how do we create a game plan? How do we strategize? How do we get our own options ready? No one in their right mind would criticize them for doing that. And that, as a unionist, I would simply say to people who share my views on unionism, well, guys, stop complaining about them. That's of course they're going to do that. What do we collectively as unionists do in prep? And it's now down from 10 years from Robinson's speech. Now down to 3 years away from the centenary. What is unionism offering, you know, particularly if there's a hard Brexit or no deal or something goes wrong on the day, which I don't think it will, but just in case, what are our options?
Okay.
Makes sense to be prepared, Frank.
Alex, thank you very much indeed. You can read that in the newsletter this morning under the banner, Alex Kane, Unionism, like nationalism, should be exploring options. Your opinions are very, very welcome as always.